So let's jump into Israel. So it's a bit comedic because last week I literally joked about how we'd probably be talking about Israel in the next episode, because last week we got away with just a minor footnote about Israel that I did sort of in the rapid fire, and then we moved on to other topics. And I'm like, oh wow, they're not in the new no major news on Israel this week. A few more. A few more hundred Palestinians dead. The death tally is at around 32,000 now. Just keeps going up. Going up slower, or at least the official numbers are going up slower. But yeah, last week I'm like, we'd probably be talking about Israel in the next episode, because they can't stay out of a news cycle to save their life. And well, here we are. Here we are. Talked last week about how they bombed the Iranian consulate in Damascus. But this week, they have bombed a convoy of UN aid workers. Seven UN aid workers who were working with the World Central Kitchen were bombed. They were in a convoy of three trucks. The Israelis hit one truck. The survivors from that truck got out and got onto the other two trucks. Then the other two trucks pull off. The Israelis then bombed the second truck. The people who lived from that one get out, get into the third truck, and then the Israelis bombed the last truck, killing everybody. And now the Israeli government is sitting here gaslighting everybody, saying, "Oh, it wasn't intentional. It was we did it, but we thought that it was an enemy. We thought it was Hamas. It wasn't intentional. And all this stupid shit that only a retard could believe. Only a retard simp could believe. Now, one of those people who died was an American. An American who had dual citizenship between America and Canada. Which, either way it goes, he's American. But it's unbelievable. Or at least, I would say it's unbelievable if it weren't so believable that they're just lying, like lying about casualties, lying about how many Hamas members you're killing, lying about the ratio of Hamas to civilians you're killing is one thing. To claim that all adult men in Gaza who have died are all Hamas is one thing. But to lie to the people who line your pockets, to lie to the country that makes your country's existence possible, to lie to us after you killed our citizen is insane to me. And there's not a, oh, this was an unfortunate event. There's not an I'm sorry. There's not a we're going to compensate you for this. There's not even the desperation. Oh, please, please forgive us. Please forgive. We didn't mean to do it. There's none of that. It's just, oh, it was unintentional. So what? We killed your citizen. Deal with it. I mean, the level of disrespect from, and you have all these simps. Oh, Israel's our most important ally, America's greatest ally. Is this your greatest ally? Is this your... Because they're not my ally. I don't know about you. Is this your greatest ally? They just bomb Americans whenever the hell they feel like? Didn't they bomb the U.S.'s Liberty a while back? A good while back? No consequences? No sanctions on them? But, but the Iranians are so dangerous. Israel... threatening to flatten Lebanon with nuclear warfare. Remember way at the beginning of this war when they were talking crazy? Crazy. And they want us to believe that this isn't a genocide. Remember that when they were talking about using nukes? And not even a sorry. Not even a sorry for killing a citizen of your largest backer, your only backer, quite frankly, because the Europeans aren't helping you. No one else is going to help you aside from the simps in the United States who can't get it through their head that this is not our friend. This shit isn't what friends do. This isn't what allies do. But we're so emotionally attached to the concept of being allies with a country that we don't realize we're in an abusive relationship. We don't realize we're sleeping with a gold digger. And they don't even let us hit. Sleeping with a gold digger and you don't even get the cooch. Imagine that. Or I guess if you're a lady, you're sleeping with a male gold digger and he wasn't even giving you dick. But this is the situation we're in. And on the subject of nukes before I move on, did you see that U.S. Congress member talking crazy about how the way we need to handle Ukraine and Israel, I disagree with Biden so much. The way we need to handle it is like Nagasaki and Hiroshima. We need to get it over with. Huh? Why? Like, even if we give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he wasn't talking about nuking Gaza and nuking Russia. Let's say that we give him the benefit of the doubt. Because you can plausibly give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he didn't go out of his way to say, yeah, we should use nuclear weapons. We should flatten it. He didn't say that. He just referred to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But you can see the problem there, because those are the only two cities in history that have ever been nuked. So to refer to them, it's like, well, what else could you be referring to if not nuclear weapons? But I'll digress. Even if we give this guy the benefit of the doubt, why would you use those two cities as your example? There were no military operations conducted for the capture of those cities. We did not storm the beaches of Nagasaki, pull off a grand outflanking maneuver against the defenders in the city, putting the city under siege using naval artillery and naval bombardment and our superior air force and air cover from our carrier battle groups. Do we just have this armada off the coast of Japan that flattened any Japanese airplane, an airstrip that tried to fight us back, and they just couldn't take the city back, and then the Marines did a glorious charge into this, and they took it? That's not how Nagasaki went down. We didn't fight some great tank battle to get past the trenches to get into Hiroshima. That's not how those two cities went down. No, we nuked those. So why in God's name would you ever refer to those cities when you're talking about a war and ending a war? Why would you refer to those two cities? Hello, it's like, even if we give him benefit of the doubt, that is such a stupid take to have. And it's such a stupid example to use, and an irresponsible one at that. It's such a stupid and irresponsible example to use, and it is really exemplary of the mental rot, the moral decay that comes from a society that is always at war. Because when your society is always at war, the people who lead that society and the people who live in that society are always thinking in terms of war. War, war, war. Who are we going to go fight? How are we going to fight the war? Oh, we should fight it like we fought that war. Oh, we're going to do it just like we did in that war. We're going to do them just like we did to the Nazis. We're going to do them just like we did. Everything is a reference to war. Everything is a reference to some battle. And you never have peace. You never have cooperation. You can never live with somebody else if all you're thinking about is how you're going to kill them. You can never live with someone else if all you're thinking about is how they could potentially kill you. Because it works both ways. It's not conducive to a healthy society, and it's the reason why the Founding Fathers and so many generations, because it wasn't just the Fathers, it was so many generations of American statesmen, real statesmen who really built this country up and got it out the fucking mud in a century plus. Like, so many generations of American politicians and statesmen. So many generations. War was bad. Why? Because it's not good for freedom. When you have war, government comes in, they censor. When you have war, you have the militarization of the people. And when you have the militarization of a people, they become soldiers. And soldiers take orders. They don't stand up to their own government. They don't stand up to their leaders. So how can you be a nation of, by, and for the people if the people are conditioned to take orders from the government? And I think that was one of the biggest unintended, well, unnoticed side effects of World War II, where you get a generation, multiple generations of American men who are put into the service and who learn how to take orders, who learn how to be obedient to their government, instead of having the government be obedient to them. And this, of course, happened at the same time our government created the institutions that are responsible for the rot that we see today. And this is why the crusade for democracy has to come to an end. We have to go back to being a nation at peace if we want to have this republic last. Because Trump, if he succeeds, if he manages to get past the cheating and all the, or hell, if we get RFK Jr., either one of them, they're our America First candidate, either one of them, America wins. And either one of them, they're going to drain the swamp because they both now have personal vendettas against them. But the republic isn't going to last if immediately after that we go straight back to who are we going to go fight? What war are we going to do? Da 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 da. And all this silliness. All this silliness. We need peace. Not peace for everyone else around the world. Peace for ourselves. So that we can have a real republic of, by, and for our people. Because war is not conducive towards the people controlling their government. It is conducive towards the government controlling the people. And that is antithetical to liberty. And you can see in a sort of box lunch way the sum of exactly what I've explained to you with that U.S. congressman talking about Nagasaki and Hiroshima. We just need to get it over with in Gaza and in Ukraine. And of course that demonstrates an ignorance of what our real capabilities are. Because if we could get it over with in Ukraine, trust me, these ideologues who hate Russia with every fiber of their being, they would have done it. But they can't. We can't. We don't have the production. But we have Israel just killing people. Just killing people. Like 32,000 Gazans that we know of. The numbers have declined at suspiciously low rates. I'll just say that much for a conflict that's still raging compared to how fast the numbers were going up before. And the fact that the Israelis have not slowed down at all in their killing of civilians. So I am increasingly skeptical of how slow that number is going up. The official tally, I should say. I think it's perhaps higher than what we're being told now. But we'll stick to the official numbers and we'll let that news come to us and we'll make those revisions when they come. But the Israelis killing Palestinian civilians, that wasn't enough. No, they need to deliberately bomb UN aid workers. And I don't really give a goddamn about the UN. I'll be straight up with you. For those of you who haven't listened to this podcast for very long, I don't think the United States should be a part of the UN. I don't think we need to be in there. The UN is literally an attempt at global governance and is the embodiment of globalism, therefore. I don't think we need supranational institutions overriding the sovereignty of nations. For all the flaws that national sovereignty and a international system based off of that brings with it, I don't think the United States should be a part of the UN. That being said, the UN is an institution that exists in the modern day. And one of those UN aid workers was American. And they died because of a deliberate attack by the Israelis. And it wasn't just once, it wasn't twice, it was three times. Meaning that they hunted these people down using drones. Using drones, they hunted these people down, followed them as they tried to drive off. Because when they got hit the first time, they tried to book it. They got hit again. They definitely tried to book it. Then they got hit third time. killed everybody. And these aren't, like, unmarked vehicles. Any competent drone operator would be able to see, oh, it's the UN Global Kitchen. I wonder if I should bomb that. There's big letters on top of the vehicle that say UN. I wonder if I should shoot that. I'm going to shoot it. I'll ask it again. America, is this your greatest ally? Is this your greatest ally? When October the 7th happened, all of a sudden you have all the conservatives, all the Israel simps talking about, oh, America's greatest ally. Oh, America's greatest ally. Oh, this terrible attack on America's greatest ally. And you, that line just kept getting repeated over and over and over again as if it meant something. America's greatest ally. Well, what exactly makes them our greatest ally? What have they done for us? Oops. No one bothered to ask that one, but I did. Because that's what America First means. Put your own country first. If they are our greatest ally, then it should be clearly definable what they do for us. What do they do for us? Because a lot of our policy in the Middle East is based off of making sure that they are safe. How does Israel make us safe? What intelligence are they sharing with us about the people coming across our border? Are they sharing any intelligence with us? Are they even bothering? That'd be a bare minimum. Like, it's not like they could do anything about the people coming across. But you could monitor them. You can give us some information if you're going to spy on anyone. No, instead they're spying on Americans. They're lobbying the American government to crack down on dissent against Israel. They're lobbying American politicians. They're lobbying America to silence Americans when those Americans voice opinions that are critical of Israel. That's not a friend. That's not an ally. That's an op. That's an opposition. That is an adversary. People want to talk about America's adversaries. Your adversaries aren't Russia and China. Quite frankly, a lot of our adversaries we call allies. All these ops that we have are inside the alliances, not on the other side. The Chinese want to sell you goods. The Israelis want you to fight their wars for them. The Israelis want you to pay for their wars for them. Ukraine wants you to pay for their wars for them. NATO wants you to fight and pay for the wars for them. Your allies are your biggest adversaries, and your adversaries are potentially your best friends. Russia and China by themselves have more to offer us than the rest of the West do. A single agreement with Russia would give us access to building a pipeline from Alaska to interface with the markets of East Asia by crossing the Bering Strait. What does NATO have to offer? Oh, we can get you into a war in Europe? Well, what do they have to offer? China is the workshop of the world. They make modern life in the United States possible. So that by itself makes them more important than the West from a purely material point of view. What? And then India? A 1.5 billion people, they're the most populous nation on the planet. You combine the three, why would we hedge our bets on the West? And more importantly, why would we put ourselves in such danger for these freeloading nations against countries powerful enough to fight us back? Why would we do that? Why would we do that? That makes no sense. Our allies are not our friends. Our allies are, quite frankly, more adversarial towards us by the things that they ask and demand of us. They're more adversarial towards us than the countries that we call adversaries. Because the Chinese would leave us alone if we left them alone. We just never get around to leaving them alone. Instead, we play stupid games like putting soldiers on Taiwan. Oh, but they're just military advisors. Put Marines on Taiwanese islands just miles off the coast of mainland China. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's not a provocation. Freedom of navigation operations in the Taiwan Strait. Oh, that's not a provocation. But then we want to be shocked and offended when a Chinese balloon flies over the skies of America. Oh, they're setting up a base in Cuba. It's like, we did this to ourselves. These countries would leave us alone and would have no problem doing so if we left them alone. But no one in our government wants to leave them alone. No one wants to leave Russia alone, so the Russians are forced, at a certain point, forced to respond to us. We had no problems with Russia throughout our entire history until 1917, when all these busybodies in Washington decided that Russia was an enemy. And even then, they left them alone for another 30 years. And then after 1945, now Russia is the enemy. They're the enemy. How they're the enemy when we were just on the same side in two world wars? Don't worry about that. They're the enemy now. Okay, they're the enemy. Don't worry about it. China left us alone for our entire history. And we had no problems with them either. Until 1949 when the communists won. And now all of a sudden, Red China is your enemy. Well, what makes them enemies now? It's the same country. Just a different government. What makes them? And we can't say it was communism. Because the Russians aren't communists anymore. But they're still the enemy? How? It has nothing to do with what they do to us or any threat that they pose to us. It's all about people in our government hating on these countries. When conditioning us to believe that they are our enemies when our enemies are in our alliances. Israel wants us to fight a war for them. They bombed a UN aid worker convoy with an American citizen in it. They bombed the Iranian consulate in Damascus, which I've now found out that among the six people that were confirmed to be dead in that attack, three of them were Iranian generals responsible for coordinating Iranian support to Yemen, to Iraq, to Syria, and to Lebanon. The axis of resistance, if you will. Bombed by Israel. These are top Iranian officials taken, wiped out in an instant in the consulate building, which was connected to, like physically connected to, the Iranian embassy in Damascus. So not only are you attacking Syrian soil, but you're attacking Iranian high-level officials in the Iranian consulate, doing damage to the Iranian embassy in the process. And what's the end game? What's the end game? You get a war with Iran. Okay, now what? You get a direct war with Iran. Because the Iranians up till this point have been... The level of restraint that they have demonstrated is shocking. It was unexpected. Completely unexpected. The level of restraint that they have exercised and that a lot of nations in the Middle East have exercised is shocking because of how unexpected it was. They didn't want any of this. And they haven't... They could have made Israel's life hell. Hezbollah could have made Israel's life hell. They've chosen not to do these things. Iran has chosen to restrict and restrain the axis of resistance where they can. But the grand idea by Israel is let's just get Iran into the war. How does that solve anything? How does that solve anything? Oh, now we can, because the speculation is that if they can get Iran into the war, now they can bring America in because America's going to protect us against Iran. We can't beat the Houthis in a naval war to reopen the straits, the Bab al-Mandab Straits in the Red Sea, on Israel's behalf. We can't do that. How are we going to fight Iran and Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis and... It's like, what's the end game here? What are you doing? What is going on? I mean, like, even if I'm just trying to wrap my head around it because it's such a bonehead move. I wouldn't set my own country up for this kind of failure if I was playing a strategy game. But the Israelis are hell-bent on committing national suicide. I just don't get it. I just don't get it. Maybe I'm too simple-minded, you know? I'll concede that. Maybe I am too simple-minded. Maybe I'm thinking too rationally. Maybe I'm just not thinking big enough. I don't know. I just don't get it. Do you guys get it? I don't know. What's the end game here? You get into a war with Iran when you're losing against Hezbollah. And you haven't even fought Hezbollah yet. You're losing against Hamas. You haven't touched them in the tunnels. You're bombing hospitals and killing Palestinian civilians, destroying your own reputation as a sovereign state. And because of the genocide that Israel's committing against the Palestinians, they are also in the process, in the greatest stroke of irony seen in the modern age, they are destroying the fabric of their right to an existence. Because remember, at the beginning of this round of fighting after October the 7th, Israel has a right to exist. Israel has a right to exist. Israel has a right to defend itself. Israel has a right to exist. Well, Israel's right to exist stems directly from their persecution at the hands of the Nazis. Israel's right to exist stems explicitly from their suffering of a genocide at the hands of Nazi Germany. The Holocaust is Israel's right to exist. That is what gave Israel the right to exist, and it is the Holocaust that is the reason why Israel has a state to this day. It is the Holocaust that is why the British took the mandate of Palestine and gave it to the Israelis. Split it up into two sections, Israel and Palestine, but they took what was just Palestine, carved it up into multiple pieces, and gave it to the Jews of Europe. Because there were Jews living there before, but they gave this land specifically to the European Jews who had just suffered a genocide. That is Israel's right to exist. The Jews were the long persecuted peoples, and they suffered a genocide. That is the case for the existence of the Israeli state. As a safe haven for Jews away from endless persecution at the hands of states that didn't represent them. And that was fine. But what they're doing in the process right now, as they're trying to wipe out every Palestinian in sight, they are destroying the basis of their own legitimacy as a state. Greatest stroke of irony in the modern age. And their brilliant idea for getting out of this mess is not to impose a peace on Hamas, not to accept a peace from Hamas when Hamas proposes it, because they've proposed it multiple times. It's not to accept any kind of mediation. It's not to show any kind of restraint. It's not to walk back the crazy statements they made about destroying 100% of Hamas, which they knew they can't do. No, they doubled down on genocide. They doubled down on genocide, and now they're lashing out at people who have nothing to do with this conflict. They're lashing out at the Iranians for having a meeting of their generals in Syria. Lashing out at the Iranians, threatening to get them into the... Because that in and of itself, just bombing the consulate is an act of war. Killing their generals is an act of war. Iran has every right to hurl as many missiles as they want at Israel. With the long string of abuses that they have suffered at the hands of the Israelis, they have every right to just empty the clip on them. But they're not doing it. Why? Because they don't want to. They don't want to. They don't want to escalate. They don't want this war, but the Israelis won't leave them alone. The Israelis are lashing out at the UN for pressuring them into making peace. They're lashing out at the World Central Kitchen for feeding a people, for daring to feed a people that the Israelis have deemed should starve. Because that's the real crime there. The Israelis say that everybody in Gaza should starve, and the World Central Kitchen had the gall to suggest otherwise. So they're just going to kill them. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get what the end game is. Like, I don't know what they're hoping to achieve. And I don't get how they don't see that what they're doing isn't going to get them that. They're not going to get there. Public opinion in the United States, their only friend, their only ally, is rapidly decaying and turning rotten towards Israel. Something that would have never happened and never would have been talked about 5, 10, 15 years ago. Never would have been talked about. America not helping Israel? America, Americans not liking Israel? Never would have been taught, never would have even been conceived, but yet here we are. I don't know what Israel's up to. I can't tell you. I'm genuinely confused. I'm genuinely confused. But I can guarantee you this. It's not going to end well for Israel.